Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 27 for the week of January 29th, 2007.
Oh, look at the pretty colors.
Hey everybody, this is Alex, and we're back. We're Leo-less. And but back all in the same room. We've got John Foster here. Hey, John.
How's it going?
We've also got, what's that guy's name? He's around here every day now. Merlin Mann.
Hello, Alex.
And also our special guest, we've got Dan Aaron Dilger.
From, hey, Alex, how's it going?
Hey, from roughlydrafted.com. And so we've got all kinds of things to talk about. I've gotten more into this whole jumping into the conversation quicker. Do you think that's a good thing?
Totally. It's very Stephanopoulos. Let's do this thing.
See, then so what happens is I want to jump into it and go boom, 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 boom. And then I go, oh, but there's things I want to talk about.
After,
and so,
after show.
There you go. So we got a couple things. Big news today. Shuffles. Did you guys see the new shuffles?
I was disappointed that they didn't have the Target version of the shuffle.
The Target version?
Yeah, the red one.
The red
one. It looks like a Target logo. And then the Steve version, which is the one that's in black.
Well, I do have to admit that I would have... now, just for those of you who haven't seen the news, of course, the iPod shuffle now comes in five colors. So now you can get blue... pink, green, orange.
That's new, right?
Those are all new. And then the original silver.
But has there been an orange iPod before?
Nano, right?
What?
Same colors as the Nano, or is it a different set? I looked at it, but it looked like the same. I didn't.
The shuffle, yeah, I believe it's the same colors. I haven't looked at them
side by
side.
Was there an orange before?
There was an orange before. It was the first generation Nano.
So that's, they're in shiny colors now. Blue diamonds.
The funniest part of that whole thing, though, was... you know, any Tuesday morning that the Apple Store gets that little sticky note and says, we'll be back soon, or whatever it is, immediately the people go spiraling into this speculation about what it could possibly mean.
What I think is funny is that the buildup, since we're right near an Apple Store, the funny thing is at 10 o'clock in the morning, though, literally when they open the doors every morning at 10 o'clock, there is like at least 30 or 40 people sitting at the door. Kind of store has 30 or 40 people sitting at the door every time they open?
They want to talk to the geniuses.
Yeah, part of that is
the thing.
Hardware.
I think it's mostly a genius thing. But it's still, you're just like, holy smokes.
Speaking of genius, it's not a iPod Nano. It's a iPod Mini that was orange.
Minis. Yeah. No, these are the shuffles that are now colorful. Now, I do wish that they, I think I might, I have the silver one. I would be tempted to buy a black one. I have no temptation to buy shiny colors.
I think the silver ones are pretty nice on their own. I personally, I'm not a fan of the funny colored iPods. You know what? I got to say, my wife's got one of those black first generation Nanos, and that's still to me like the coolest looking iPod there's been. It's the perfect size. It looks great. The color's fantastic. It's a little scratchy.
I like black.
Yeah, I do too.
Did you record albums?
Of course, we're all wearing. Just so for those of you listening, we're all wearing black shirts. You know, Merlin's got a little bit of blue on him, but he's got a black coat over top of it.
I've got the CBC logo on my shirt.
So yeah. Wait, Merlin, did you record music from a USB turntable and then put it onto your iPod Nano? That's scratchy.
Man, who have you been hiring, John? Man, no. That is the thing I got to say with the, I do have one of those minis. No, what are they called now? Nano. Nano's the, And I've got a green one of those that the Nike folks actually gave me. Uh-huh. And I do like that it's not as scratched. I like that surface, but if I could have that in just silver, I think that would be fine for me. Do you think the kids like these colors? Are they excited about colors?
I think some kids must like the colors because Apple keeps on making them, but I'm not a real color guy.
I'm a watcher of iPods on the Muni here in town, and I'm an observer of what
have
the
you seen
kids
a lot of color?
I have seen I got to say, in terms of in the last maybe 6 months, I see a lot of people who still have minis. Minis seem to be the ones that a lot of people snatched up. And then after that, I think number two, lots of video iPods. You guys read Muni, yeah, right? Yeah. What do you think?
lots of Mac minis.
That would be
lots
awesome.
Lots of minis, yeah.
You fit so much music.
Well,
on
I'm
here.
Sorry. It's like almost
the new boombox. They just have a mini on each ear.
It's multimedia.
No, it's Mac. It's a iPod minis and it's shuffles.
You see a lot of the shuffles.
I see, and then I'm also seeing a lot of the new mini or the new nanos. Mm-hmm.
The new nanos are extremely useful. I find I have one, and I.
You use it as a thumb drive too?
Is that how I don't. Here's why I don't use it as a thumb drive. I used to use my shuffle as a thumb drive all the time. Maybe I am thinking of the shuffle, not the nano. I was thinking of the shuffle. I have a nano.
Shuffle's the one you lose.
Shuffle is the one that I'm constantly losing, but I'm using most of the time. And I love the little clip on, you know, so I clip that on. And I use that all the time, especially when I'm working out. That's like the perfect little workout node. And then my shuffle I do use as a thumb drive. Or as a big thumb drive that has, so half of it usually has data on it and half of it. And I talked to someone at Apple and they were like, you should not be doing that. Not so much with the shuffle, with the bigger ones. Cause I use on my video iPod, literally 2/3 of it are my presentations. So when I'm speaking at places,
really
a big chunk of my stuff is all my presentations because just, they're all backups just in case I get there and my Mac crashes or something doesn't work. I have everything I have to present on my iPod all the time so that I'm able to very quickly react and just plug it into a computer and figure it out later. So I'm pretty particular about that, but I use that one as my backup drive all the time. And the guys at Apple were like,
are you running it?
You know, it's not built for that. The hard drive's not built for that.
I was going to say, do you have a system on there?
I don't have a system.
See, I put OS 10 on one, and then I talked to somebody about that because I had my old white iPod. I thought, what the hell? I'll make this into my emergency disk. I'll put, you know, whatever, Discord and everything. And like, do you have any idea what you're doing to that hard drive?
Yeah.
It's not rated for running a system like that.
That's exactly. They were like, well, that thing's going to last you about 6 months. And I said, well, just long enough for Apple to release another iPod.
It's like emptying a syringe of crystal meth into someone's neck.
Well, the funny thing was is that I put OS 10. I think it was 10.4 on a first generation iPod, and I used it to upgrade all my machines because it took significantly less time to do it from the iPod than it did from the DVD.
It's even faster from a FireWire hard drive.
Yeah, but I didn't happen to have a FireWire hard drive with me at the time, but I did have a first generation iPod.
But you could hear the sounds of crests falling all over the internet. As the disappointment bloomed, because people had some very fancy ideas about what was going to be coming out today.
Somebody has been predicting wild and crazy things for this Sunday.
I got to tell you, this Sunday is going to be, there's going to be some very, you know, I don't, if you want, we can get into it later. There's going to be some very
day.
Exciting
we're
things.
We're talking
coming.
About iPods right now. It's going to be a big day for Merlin. We all think that Sunday is going to be a big day. We'd like to remind the crowd that Merlin has unequivocally predicted that we are going to see a widescreen iPod packed with Beatles songs in celebration of the Beatles and the widescreen iPod.
Yes, absolutely. I have my sources on this are extremely my butt. So I have every reason to believe that, you know, that's Leo's fault. I for the 5 or 6 people who listen to this podcast, you know that I am not any good at this stuff. And so I just threw that out for fun. And then Leo had an aneurysm, went on all these podcasts, and told everybody.
He's on Wired.com.
Wired. And Wired, of course. And I have to say, I cannot believe that this is being spread around, that there's going to be this. And it's like, dude, it's. And this is. But this is the life that we chose for ourselves.
What was so funny was is that Merlin, it was Merlin made this prediction less than 3 minutes after he had said, I'm not going to do any more prognostication.
No prognostication. I'm thinking Merlin's completely phony made-up rumor should become a regular feature of this program. By the end of this show, I will have another crazy rumor.
Okay.
That will be on Dig.
So did you make up the name, the Yellow Submarine iPod? Was that the...
That wasn't me!
And someone else...
Wait, they're
going to
ship a yellow iPod on Sunday?
Well, I think someone took basically his idea and put a name on it. It was the Yellow Submarine iPod.
I think you misunderstood, Dan. It's going to be an actual submarine. Now, it's going to be a full-screen submarine iPod. It's going to
be submersible in water.
Well, yeah.
It's going to have a periscope and everything.
A periscope, and it's going to have big seats for bass fishing on it.
I heard that it's going to have enough air supply for like 20 minutes of diving.
It's going to be free like a bird.
Well, because it's got 802.11 built into it, you'll actually be able to do a ping for real.
Really?
On the submarine iPod.
Yeah.
And, ping, get it?
And unlike the... unlike
prepare
the,
for dive.
And unlike the singular plan, you are, theoretically, you're going to get strawberries forever.
It'll
be great.
Yeah.
So that means they're shipping a strawberry iPod as well.
Yes, exactly. So... So
now they shut that one down, actually.
Apple ships 802.11n, charges you $1.99. That's what they went through with it.
Wait. It only costs $1.99 to get a 802.11 router?
And no, it costs $1.99 to have the one that's already in your computer upgraded.
I read that if you bought the thing,
it's free if you buy it.
Well, it's $179 if you buy it.
Now. But I'm saying if you already have it, so it turns out
you're talking about the thing that enables your Macintosh computer.
Yeah, if you have let me back up.
It's the driver.
If you have a MacBook Pro Intel Core 2 Duo, boy, man, these things are getting really long.
That's the second generation of MacBook.
Yeah, the MacBook with Intel Core 2 Duo, the Mac Pro with AirPort Extreme option, and the iMac with Intel Core 2 Duo, they all have 802.11n there, like it was in the hardware when they shipped them, but it wasn't enabled because I think the standards weren't finalized. Was that the deal? Anyway, so what they've done is that they now have a software enabler, and we talked about this a little bit last week, but it's now $1.99.
Instant, you pay, you download it.
You run it.
And you're done.
And you got fast connectivity, theoretically.
For all, even if I understand correctly, it's for all of those applicable devices that you have, right? You buy it one time and it works for all of them. The license goes for all of them. Is that correct?
I don't know that for sure.
It's probably per machine.
But I thought something on Daring Fireball. It said that you were covered for all of your, is it your
I bet
home
you it's all
your,
of them.
Here's the thing. If you're buying an 802.11n, or wait, that's not what they call it. It's an AirPort Extreme with N in it. You're getting that anyway, so save your $1.99.
The updater, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
the only reason you need to buy the driver from Apple for $2 is if you are using it with another computer. Like if you have two laptops, two Core Duo laptops, and you wanted to work between them, then that would be a use case. Otherwise, like you said, you'd be buying the thing from Apple.
Or if you already have an N router and you want to be able to use it.
Yeah.
That's not from Apple.
I wonder if the N router is the pre-N, if it works, if it's compatible enough to work with
things
that
are
already out there.
802.11n.
Well, there's a lot of N products that
sure, but it's not
the things that people might have may not work.
Just have to get a new router.
That would solve the problem.
How fast is N?
Fast.
It's fast.
Pretty fast.
Well, it takes about 20 minutes to get from here to Magnolia on the N.
Okay, so
man,
for those of you listening,
did you hire a high school kid? What, where are you getting these from?
I wrote them.
You hired a gag writer?
I wrote these.
You wrote these yourself?
I wrote these myself
at Magnolia.
No.
So for those of you listening, John is referring to the infamous
John's pun will now be provided with subtitles. Yes.
Hey, where's Craig Severson when you need him?
For the San Francisco impaired.
Yeah, so John's referring to the infamous N.
N
Judah.
Yeah.
The N Judah in San Francisco, which is it's a train. It's a train.
Yes.
And the N is it's theoretically fast. But when we're talking about computer N's, what is the speed on an N?
Yeah.
Well, the theoretical speed, which is what they're usually given in, like 802.11g is what, 54
right.
megabits? So the theoretical speed for N is, I think, 200. Or is it
200 megabits?
I think it's actually 500.
I think it's 500, but I think we
heard the typical speed is
right.
200.
Well,
so the typical speed for G, by comparison, I think is usually stated around 20. So it's around 10 times the typical speed of.
So now you're talking about being able to move, and what this is going to be important for, of course, is I think this is in preparation for dealing with the new Apple TV. On top of making just everything faster.
I can tell you what else is going to be useful for. I mean, I'll let the cat out of my own bag here. I pop for one of those Infrant ReadyNAS drives, which is changing my life.
How do you like that drive?
I love it. And to have that thing hooked up to that
and have real
Extreme
speed.
Going at that kind of speed, because the biggest hang up right now, I mean, you know, with backup, the hardest part is that first the first time you move your stuff over, the diffs after that are no big deal, or the changes.
Right.
But that first time that you move your whole movie library, or God, my iPhoto library, is such a pain. And part of it is it's getting stuck at around a mega. Now I get these confused, but what I'm getting over my network right now, hardwired, is like a megabyte a second in terms of the actual real data that's getting moved.
Right.
So, and that's through that's the 80, that's through the 802.11
or G. B or G.
Or yeah, or, I'm sorry, through the WRT54G.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's your cable going at 100 base T.
Okay. So will I see a significant increase on the new guy?
No.
All right. Well, I'm still really glad I got that ready NAS. But
you'd see a significant increase if you went to gigabit. So if you got a new router, which
is like $30.
Yeah.
I mean, nowadays the gigabit, no one should really be using. If you have a lot of, if you're moving any kind of significant data, all these new Macs have gigabit connections, and you should be plugging them in.
I would sometime like John or Dan or somebody who's smart to talk about how you. No, and that was not directed at you, Alex. But to talk about how you bring.
So you gotta, Merlin sitting there staring
hey,
right at
no
me.
No offense, Alex.
Someone,
oh
goes,
no.
Merlin looks at me and he goes, "Someone," and then he looks straight at me and he goes, "Someone smart."
No offense. I would love to understand at some future date how N enters into our life. And you mentioned something, John, that got me thinking in a previous episode where you talked about how if you've got this sort of impure mud network that's not purely N, it brings everything down.
Yep.
And
if you
so
have
do I need to run two networks to have B and G?
You need to have a B network. If you have one device that's B, you need to have a separate
the
only.
The dumbest kid. You got to teach to the dumbest kid in the
class.
You got
to teach, right. And then
so what we're all doing really is we're all getting rid of all of our B stuff and we're getting all N. We got to go get new extremes, right?
Yeah.
We have to go all the way up to get the full speed, get all the left. Oh, and one note, the software license for the 802.11n enabler software allows you to install and use it on all computers under your ownership or control. So you can otherwise pass it around.
It's pretty good for a couple of bucks.
Yeah, if you split
so
it with
we just need one listener to pay the $2 and we're all good.
You Unix
but then you have to give them control of your
computer. It definitely does look like Apple. I mean, Apple's not trying to make any money on this. It definitely thinks that there is some concern whether it's grounded or not grounded, given all the trouble all the trouble that Apple's having with the SEC. I think that it's just them not taking any chances at all with anything, mm-hmm. and saying 199. They really don't care what happens to it after it gets out. You know, it's they're literally just managing books. I mean, that's what it appears.
And you think that's like a Sarbanes-Oxley kind of thing?
It's
or SEC.
That's what thing? They say, and I'm inclined to believe them. I mean, you know the. You know, we
not
we
enough money to
earlier.
Be kind of worth the yeah. trouble in some ways.
If it was like $100, I could see people flipping out pretty good about that.
It's
but $2,
right? it's like half a latte. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think people were, yeah, whatever. Whatever. That's all I got to say.
One kind of notable thing missing on the new router, the new N router, is that the actual ports on it has five, it has a built-in switch, but it's 10/100 ports. It's not gigabit.
Really? Yeah.
So that seems
right.
like kind of a big.
Well, but that wouldn't. But the thing is that it wouldn't help. I think the theory is that it wouldn't necessarily help you because it's not going to go faster than the 100 port, right?
Well, ideally, say if you had a desktop and a laptop, you right. could plug them into it and go fast between the two. But you can't do that.
I'm gonna have right. a. I'm gonna have a switch that's a gigabit switch anyway.
Right.
All the stuff that
it's
I need.
Nice to have it all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you make a drawing of this or something?
Yeah.
And so you have you got your AirPort Extreme that's mm-hmm. going to be your. Your router and your way you connect to your modem, however.
No, I'm using the WRT54G hacked with DD Write to be.
Oh, really?
Router. Yeah.
Huh.
And then the AirPort plugs into that. And then there's another gigabit switch that plugs into somewhere else.
And I'll tell you from experience, we have a couple. I mean, and I admit we have some fast drive. We have a couple X raids here,
mm-hmm.
and then everything's all connected to the gigabit. And you can get used to gigabit, and it's really hard to go back.
It's like it's almost
gigabit is like having a is using a drive over the network with gigabit is like having a local drive. It's
yeah.
crazy
yeah, it's,
fast.
It's like having FireWire 400 hooked
yeah.
up to your Mac.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you can edit. You can sit there and edit full res plates over the network
over the interweb.
This might be a good Mac break.
It would be. In fact, we could probably do handheld just in our back in our little lab area.
Because this is I think it's. I mean, I don't know.
Well, here's the thing.
This a little confusing.
A lot of people who are Mac people, Apple people, don't want to be system administrators. They don't want to know anything about the IT stuff. They want to plug it in and have it work. Which is really to Apple's credit for making these things that basically allow us to do that. But at some point, you got to geek into the IT. You got to go and have a little bit of knowledge about your network and the type and the topology of what it can do.
Apple released a new document too that goes over that for the in-router, and it's really interesting to see how well they've put together the documentation on it. I mean, it really explains a lot of things that are kind of difficult to get across.
There's screenshots of the app, the updated version of the app, too.
It's like the planning your wireless network document.
Right.
That was back in 19.
Right. It's just updated for in, and it has a lot of information. One of the things that I thought was interesting was that in also supports two different bands. So it used to be that with B and G are on one band, and A was that weird band that's kind of like G, but it's on a different band, where in can actually operate on two different bands now. So you can actually have, like you were talking about, run a standard airport network on one channel, and this would be running in a totally different band, so it wouldn't interfere with it, depending on whether you have cordless phones or other things, depending on what band they work on.
Get rid of your cordless phones. They're evil. Go to 900 megahertz, and then all your problems are solved.
We had. I'm sorry. I just have to say we had this. When we shoot MacBreak or we shoot some of the stuff. We shoot little things here. We have someone in the back room connecting. We have someone in the back room doing the capture, and the camera just sits by itself in the front room, and someone's sitting there talking, and the person who's doing the slate sits there, and we've got walkie talkies, you know, little Motorola walkabouts, yeah. You know, going, you know, psh, roll camera, and then you hear this. Speeding, you know, and then you okay, you know, and then you go, you know, whatever, MacBreak, take one, and whack, you know, and then you walk out, and we got this thing where we go roll camera, and you hear this hello, hello,
like you're on somebody's wireless.
Some construction guy upstairs is like his little walkabout is saying he's hearing roll camera, and he's like. I do not understand.
What do you mean, roll camera?
Yeah. So Verizon evidently has rejected it. Evidently, 2 years ago, Apple came to Verizon. Verizon was their number one choice, I guess, evidently, or their original choice for doing the iPhone, partnering with the iPhone. And Verizon has, I guess it turns out they rejected Apple. They said no. Nee. They didn't want it. It turns out that I guess Apple... Apple wanted a lot of stuff, and we don't know what Apple's getting from Singular, but this is the kind of stuff that Apple wanted from Verizon. One is they wanted a share on all, you know, revenue for the subscription. They wanted discretion on whether to replace or repair the phone. They wanted to be able to sell it at Apple and Verizon stores, but did not want it to be sold at Walmart, Best Buy, or other Verizon distributors. You know, and so there was a lot of, you know, control. They wanted to have a lot of control over how the iPhone was distributed. And this is typical Apple stuff. This is why Apple does what it does. It keeps a lot of close tabs, and Verizon said, thanks, but no thanks. Was this a good thing or a bad thing? Do you think that Verizon really screwed up here, or do you think that they just would have lost too much control?
It seems like the interesting thing is why Verizon is telling us this. Is it kind of an announcement of not really sour grapes, or why did they have to come out and release information saying that they were asked and turned it down? It sounds kind of like more of a cover our tracks kind of statement of
like the guy who was in charge of that deal. He was like, no, this is how it went down, guys. Just remember how this happened.
Well, and I think that it might have been, and I don't have the background on why this came out. It appeared that they were getting questioned about it, or whether they had been in talks with Apple, and I think that they had to say, we were in talks with Apple. We turned it down. This is why. You know, I think that it's all over. I mean, it's all over the web over the last couple of days of them doing it, and there's a wide variety of this might have been a good thing because they would have lost a lot of control over how they do all their phones. But the thing is, I think that they're going to be in trouble with is I'm a Verizon customer until June. You know, I mean, I'm a Verizon customer. I've been a Verizon customer for 2 or 3 years. It's probably the best coverage in the United States, and I will be moving to Singular when I buy my iPhone.
This is an interesting thing because this shows just how old school phone companies really are, that they're thinking like 3 years ago or 2 or 10 years ago for that matter, where cell phones are this mystique. And when you think about it, voice is nothing more than an application sitting on top of a computer. That's what a cellular network is. So when you look at it as just a pure bit play,
Well, it's only cell providers here in the United States. I mean, the big thing is that you go somewhere else, you go to Europe or you go to Africa, which I see a lot, and it's all about the phone. You know, everyone's selling the phone. Whoever you use to happen to hook up with your phone is not nearly as important as you know, which phone you get and all the different features that it has. And like Wi-Fi phones, for instance, are pretty common in Europe, or much more common than the United States, because the cell carriers don't have the same kind of leverage. But I think that, you know, I think that Verizon stands to lose. You know, I will say something. I'll make a prognostication. I mean, I think that they stand to lose anywhere from, you know, 1 to 5 million subscribers over 2 years.
That's like a couple of billion dollars.
It's a lot of money. I mean, I spent they're going to lose mine, and mine's I think my service is $100 to $150 a month.
One thing that's interesting about Verizon is, you know, everyone's locked into a contract of some length, but Verizon just changed their terms of contract recently, and that opened up a loophole so that anyone who has a Verizon contract can ask to be taken out of it. And so anyone who wanted a iPhone and who's on Verizon can escape their contract between now and then. I think it expires in sometime in March or April.
That's an important thing for people to know, is that they should do.
Yeah, you can Google on the web, and
because I'm on a month-to-month, you know, my contract ended a while ago, and I was about to replace it. You know, get a new Trio. You know, I was looking at like the N95, I think, or something like that. And as soon as I was waiting for Macworld to find out whether the iPhone was really going to come out. And once it did, I was like, well, I'll just go month to month until I drop them. You know, so it's. Are you getting an iPhone?
Yeah, I'm getting one for free, remember?
Yeah, exactly. We're hoping that Scott Bourne is going to get us one.
Already getting signals from Scott that he's going to renege. No, because I told you that if it was at Macworld and I could hold it in my hand, I'd get it for you.
We could have.
So I think he's trying to find some little weasel way to get
out
of it.
If we would have known that was the case, we would have folded up the little paper thing and given it to him, and then he could
have held
it.
Scott Bourne's a businessman, John. Next time, we're going to get it in writing.
Are you getting an iPhone?
Yeah, and Sprint's losing a customer.
Yeah. Who are you on now?
Sprint. What, you know? You know how you're making a couple, three new podcasts every day here? I want to just do a podcast on Sprint. I just think it's funny that, you know, there's stuff, you know, the phone industry and the cable industry are two of these industries that they sometimes seem like they really just go out of their way to kind of throw it in your face that you've got a contract with them and you've just got to kind of suck it up and deal with whatever their service is. And there's just, it seems to me there's a funny zeitgeist in the air right now between this and Vista. There's a funny zeitgeist about, wow, I may have just reached an important financial breaking point where I have to really reconsider where I want to put my money.
Yeah.
Right. So on the one hand, you got people going, well, okay, you know, increasingly this phone is becoming a really important part of the way that I do things. And I really want this iPhone. You know, I'm speaking here as a notional person. And ditto, you're going, wow, you know, if I want to run Vista, I really need to go buy some new hardware.
Yeah.
And
once you get to that point, you have to make that decision.
My good friend, the Macalope, was talking about this today. And the whole idea that this is a...
When is the Macalope going to be on this show? That's what I want to know.
Okay. So, you know, the thing, the reason I'm here all the time?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Macalope's going to do that.
That's
off the record.
So, Macalope and Fake Steve at the same time.
and Artie McStraw, man. But I guess all I'm trying to say is that it's you know, I think that when you're one of those kind of loudmouth internet bloggers, you can really make it too much of a case about, oh, good service this and bad service that, and you've just lost a customer and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, there's a lot of feelings that store up over time, and it doesn't take that much to make somebody go, you know what, if I've got to spend, so let me ask you this, what's it going to cost the average person to be able to really run Vista in the way that it's meant to be run, right? You're talking about a pretty significant upgrade for a lot of people.
Well, I mean, it's going to, yeah.
It's a new machine.
It's a new machine.
It's basically
I don't think a super fast new machine, but I mean, they all depend.
But a modern video card, you know.
I mean, if they get a $500 Dell, it'll probably run
really, Vista. If you're really sick of that feeling of being in that world and you go, you know what, I got to spend $600 to get out of this.
Yeah, I mean, it's.
By the same token, I'm going to go and I'm going to drop a lot of cash on this. You know, and at a certain point, that $150 or whatever it is that hems you into your Sprint contract starts to seem like, you know, this way to buy your way out of the war. You know?
I'm spending that every month. So, you know, to me, it's not that
big. It's a lot of money, but it's not that much money to, like, be in this malignant relationship with a company for 5 years.
Who are you with? You're with Sprint?
I'm with Sprint, yeah.
And you're with?
Sprint's really got me over a barrel. Yeah.
I'm with nobody because I...
Oh, that's right.
Oh, boy, here we go.
No, I just made the decision.
He may take two drinks.
I made... Really? This is a thing?
This is, yeah, John, when you mentioned that you don't have a phone, people take two drinks.
Nuh-uh.
Everyone take two drinks.
All right, where's my beer?
Except you and me. You and me don't drink anymore.
Oh, that's right. We're done. So I made the conscious decision that I was not going to pay $800 a year for 11 digits to be able to have to be able to offer people the privilege of bugging me when I really can't be reached.
See, now I have one, but I'm a little rough about my message.
Sure, but at the same time, it's like $800. I can buy a whole lot of stuff for $800.
I think I travel too much. I think if I need it to.
But also, John, you're a geek. And I mean that in a good way.
Yeah.
But you're somebody who's willing to take a little bit of time to tinker with your life and say to people, well, there's certain limitations and boundaries that I've set here for how I want to deal with the world. But, you know, increasingly, that's not an option that a lot of people have.
Well, and it is. I mean, like, for instance, as I said, we were talking about this before the show. I mean,
one thing you can say for all of us is I think we all, I mean, I don't know Dan very super well, but I think we all in our own way are trying to hammer our communications world into some kind of a submission. Yeah. And to be able, you know what, I don't mind paying a little bit more, but I want to understand what I'm getting and I want it to work the way that I want it to. And I got to tell you, there's a part of me, I guess the thread that I'm trying to pull out of all this is, I think that kind of empowerment is starting to really bubble to the surface.
Well, when you see people who they don't just want to switch over to a new phone, when they get excited about it for whatever reason, they want to kill their old phone. You know, I mean, yeah, that's a different, I mean, you know, because I mean, literally, I go home dreaming about putting C4 into my Trio and blowing it up, you know, because I'm just so tired of it. You know, I get so frustrated with this.
And to carry the analogy over, if Sprint suddenly went, hey, you know what, we're going to charge you an extra $50 a month because of the new Vista network we've installed. It's going to run a little bit slower and you need to buy a new. No, you go, you know what, I want, the analogy I guess I'm trying to make is that if you have a strong, compelling consumer reason to go, okay, well, in my case, if I go out and I buy the Leopard, it's going to enable me to do A, B, C, and D, you know, and the value is there for me. I guess there's probably a lot of people out there who feel that way about Vista. The analogy I want to make with the phone is, you know, there's a lot of compelling reasons.
Yeah.
As imperfect as the iPhone is, it's going to really turn people's heads and make them say, screw the $150 that I'm going to pay down to Sprint.
Well, and I
screw
think
my contract.
Here's the thing is that I think that a lot of people are, there's a lot of people. And this, what I'll be interested to see is if your prediction is true or not about Sunday.
Which one?
The submarine. Okay.
Yeah. The submarine. Whether the Merlin submarine is going to be
I don't know if I mentioned this. Did I mention that it will include a fry daddy?
You did not mention that.
Yeah, sure. You can make beignets and.
So
the interesting thing is that if they don't release, if this is the only way you get widescreen, I do have to say one thing is that. There's a lot of people that don't really care about the phone functionality at all. They'll buy it just because they want a widescreen iPod. And I think that what people are not calculating on this, I know we're belaboring this, we're going to move on here in a second, is that there's a lot of people that are going to buy this just because they want their iPod be merged with their phone. And they really don't care about, I mean, it's not that it's this great phone. It's just that
they want their music merged with their phone well.
Yeah, merged well.
Because right now, there's phone players out there, but they're
whatever.
A joke.
But they're not, and they don't, and once again, they don't get to the killer app, which is,
iTunes.
You know, iTunes, which, by the way, is now illegal in Norway. Apple DRM is illegal in Norway. So Apple digital rights management lock on its iPod and its iTunes software. This is according to outlaw.com, actually. Is illegal. The consumer ombudsman. What's an ombudsman?
An ombudsman is someone who works inside of an organization or corporation, but represents the viewers and readers and so forth
okay.
to present issues inside the company.
We don't really have any of those here, but they have them in Norway, and it has and they've ruled that that Apple is, you know, I guess iTunes is illegal. In Norway.
Did they also rule that the Xbox is illegal because the games you buy for the Xbox don't work on the PlayStation?
No, they didn't.
Is Windows, is that illegal because the applications don't just automatically run on Linux?
Can't play these CDs on my 8-track player.
You know, the question is, what is Apple really going to do? I mean, it's okay, for the listeners in Norway, I'm sorry, but it's not a significant market for iTunes. You know,
why are they saying it's illegal? They're saying it's anti-competitive?
Yeah, I mean, and this is, and it's not just Norway. Norway's starting to say this. Germany's starting to say this. France has been saying, but France says this about everything.
It's old Europe.
Old Europe old Europe is up in arms. They're saying that basically that Apple is, you know, and it's true. I mean, when the longer DRM, the more songs you buy from iTunes, the less likely you are to use anything else because it's just I don't want to deal with the. You know, I don't want to deal with moving them over. I don't want to deal with converting them because there's a lot of songs. I mean, you can rip the DRM out if you want, but it's a pain in the ass. I mean, it's one of those things that I don't bother. I mean, I just use my songs the way I use them.
Someday, J-Hymn will rise. Someday.
So we just want to know what the number two player in Norway is. Like, who's making the noise about this song that they can't put on that player?
Yeah, and I think that it's just that this one only works with one player. And now the question is that does the Zune really? The Zune is the only one that uses the format control.
I'd like to see some numbers on Zune usage in Norway. Like net. Did you see that? Did you see the photos that were going around of the Zunes that have been marked down? Now they've got with the big markdown sticker on them. Did you see that?
I didn't.
Oh, so $183
$183.
So what did that represent? Is that are they like in the remainder bin?
25% discount.
Wow,
that's like the profit before the profit.
I don't think there's any profit.
Oh,
there wasn't
much profit.
And
at
that was like what is this like 3 months ago? How long ago?
Yeah, November.
Wow.
Yeah, it's they're having a little trouble getting market penetration. I think that's the problem. Speaking of iTunes, multiple iTunes libraries. Have you guys seen that? Did you look much into that?
No, I didn't see
hold
that.
Hold down the option key.
Yeah, when you start up, you hold down the option key. Is that right?
And this is an iTunes 7, so this is an update this week.
This is something iPhone has had for a while. I think it's really cool.
Well, the way that you had to do it before, there was this utility that you had to run, and you could point it to the thing, and it might
work.
Well,
that was the hackiest of hacks. Because all that would do is rename, if I remember, it would rename your file.
Yeah.
And back it up, and then, yeah.
But you had to pay the guy $25 for the privilege of doing this, and like, or maybe that was the other one. Right. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Because
so like
now,
basically run MV.
Yeah. But now it's important. I mean, and especially this is really useful when you have like, for instance, my laptop, I'm very touchy about how much data is on my laptop because I'm always running out of space. And now I can have an external library with my big library. When I'm in the office, I can say, look at that library. When I'm at home, you know, when I'm traveling, I can say, well, look at the internal library. I can move that stuff around seamlessly. Like,
and it doesn't confuse iTunes about your DRM acceptability.
Nope.
And
right.
The so coolest cool. thing was I got rid of 50 gig off my MacBook.
Yeah.
By being able to do this. 50 gig.
So you keep a friendly little child-sized amount of music for traveling around, and then you put everything on an external drive, and then when you go home.
I have to admit, I have almost no songs on my we're talking about this. I have like almost no songs on my iTunes. In iTunes.
How many drinks is that?
Yeah, exactly. No.
What do you put on your shuffle? You just listen to your presentations
on my shuffle.
when you're running.
On my iPods, I have them. I have
next
some.
Slide,
some,
please.
I have the data. I have a jukebox, so I have like I have one old laptop that has everything. And then when I sync my shuffles, see, Leo, if you're listening, I am weird. I got it.
This should be the next self-reflexive Mac break. Is inside the incredibly squirrely lives of people like you and John, and this weird like no, palace of mad. Technology that you
it
have
works,
created.
It works, though. It works. It's just, it's an old laptop.
What kind of jukebox?
It's an old laptop.
It's a Wall
no,
Street.
I called it. It's a Wall Street. It's like a little black Wall Street.
An old G3?
Wow. Yeah.
I had a Lombard.
Yeah. So I had one of those too. I've had one of all of them. But they just slowly, you can see I got two laptops here right now. One's recording the show and the other one I'm actually surfing through. But the Wall Street is usually hooked up to this big M station. How do you like your M station, by the way?
Oh my gosh! So for you listening along at home, Alex was kind enough to send me home one day with an M station.
The little ball, the little orb.
It looks like what is that? What's that Woody Allen movie? Where you,
Sleeper.
Where you pass like the pleasure orb around or whatever? It kind of looks like that.
It's like a pleasure orb, but for iPods.
It's like an iPod bowling ball, and I gave it to my lady wife, and she loves it. It's great. And I'll tell you what's great about it. This is going to seem really stupid, but I love the fact that it charges. That sounds so dumb.
Syncs.
But you just put it out
there.
You
know, it syncs too.
I haven't done that. You hook it up through USB.
It's got a little USB, so you can actually sync to your iTunes.
This is truly a great time to be alive. We're doing things today. We got penicillin, okay? We got the M audio.
For now. You have penicillin for now.
Really? He's saying it's losing its effectiveness.
There's only one left. There's only one.
There's only one cylinder.
No, there's only one cylinder left. The Cipro.
running on one cylinder.
Man! Hey, quit stealing John's jokes.
And eat bananas while you can.
All right, that's another this week.
I love
this
it.
And you're dead.
I love it, and it is very easy to use. I have no dog in this fight. I apart from getting a freebie of this from Alex, but I think it's really fun, and it's very compact. Now, the one that you have, Alex, to describe it to people.
I have the tower.
You have a very large one. It's much more Logan's Run. It's
in the future, music will come from tubes. it's a big tube. It's like a
what
series
does it
of
look
big tubes.
Like?
Well, the big
it's not
the
a
big,
truck.
It's this big M station tower, and it's got this the big tube in the center is largely empty, but it's what gives it the base, mm-hmm. And then it's got these little ones. The top ones are kind of mid range and high, you know, and high, and it. It's probably some of the cleanest sound.
It's about 3.5 feet tall.
Yeah, and it's a tower.
It's eight inches.
And it's probably the cleanest sound I've heard of anything outside of a really like a if I'm going to spend a couple $1,000s on a stereo system, I'll get something nice and clean.
I like that this thing comes with a remote too, and the remote actually has bass and treble on it that you can fiddle with.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's good. I like it. It's the best one.
Thank you very much for that.
I have them both. You can see I have the hi-fi here, and I have that.
Is that
one.
A Sonos?
What? No, I have that's Apple's hi-fi.
Oh,
and then
oh,
I have
right,
this,
right.
And then I have the L7 at the house, and so I have like a little bit of all of them. And this tower is definitely by far the best one that I have, except it's the biggest one.
Well, it's kind of built-in sub. This whole black thing is a
it's like a resonating chamber.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's cool. Anyway, have you seen the new ads? Did you see the UK ads?
The tentacle thing was
got a Mac.
I think they're very funny.
Yeah, I actually think they're funnier than the American ads.
That's what people
are saying. Why are the English always funnier and smarter than we are?
They're better educated and they're very dry.
It's always that way.
Mm-hmm. Also, the food's not as good there, so.
They have to do something.
They need the amusement. Yeah.
Well, people didn't like the Mac guy in the American ads. And, you know, I can take him or leave him. But the English guy almost seemed a little bit snippier.
He does.
Like arrogant and kind of
I still think that's just like off-putting.
But those guys are an actual comedy team, right? In Britain.
Yeah.
And I think that I don't know. That's just the personality
maybe
of a
it's
Mac
a different
user.
Taste
I'm sorry. But I mean, you know,
yeah.
Mac users, I mean, a lot of Mac users are a little like that with PC users. I mean, I get that it's a little snitty, but that's the way we are.
I thought they were really enjoyable.
The English Mac guy mm-hmm. looks a lot like the impersonator Mac guy that PC used as the imposter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's very similar.
I only ever heard that ad when Leo played it. I never saw that. Yeah.
He looks a bit like him.
So it's good. Now, also in the news, IBM and Intel are pushing, most importantly to us, Intel has released new special transistors that have high K materials that are better insulators.
Is that the silicon chips?
Silicon dioxide is the
old chips.
Is the insulator for the old chips. And the thing is pretty good insulator, but it's not a great insulator, especially when you get
When
you get down in the 65, you get in the small 65 nanometer range.
I just want to say, like I was reading through this information and I got down to somewhere, and I don't think it's in the article that I have in front of me, but it said that the current chips, the insulator is 5 atoms thick. I just wanted to say that for a second to imagine that there's an insulator in these chips. It's 5 atoms.
You can make something 5 atoms thick?
That's what I thought. I was like, that's really...
The quality control on that must be pretty intense.
Well, a lot of times, you know, that's what the whole... when you buy speeds of chips, you know, a lot of the chips, you know, they build this wafer and they do the best they can to make it right. You know, the big one that has all the chips in it because they're all mass produced. And then they rate them. And so the faster chips are the one, when you buy a faster chip, it's the one that was rated that, oh yeah, it's stable that fast.
It's less broken than the other ones.
It's less broken.
That's why they're built to go a lot faster, but that's why you can overclock them, is because they back it up to whatever they think is going to be safe without what they call errata, which was the big problem with the 604. So all the G4 stuff, you know, the reason that the 604 had all this problem is because the Altavec had all kinds of errata once you sped it up. So while it was really fast at math operations, when you started clocking it higher, it would start to break down. And a lot of that is caused by the – and someone's going to probably email us and correct me. I'm not an engineer, but this is my understanding of it. I used to have these guys that I –
I'd be happy to clarify any of this for you, Alex.
Yeah, exactly. So these guys that I had some friends with newer, so they would get into these chip conversations with me. And so – but evidently, you know, the big problem is that it is only 5 atoms thick, and it's been getting smaller and smaller and smaller as we add more and more transmitters. And the problem is that
transistors.
Transistors. Sorry, not transmitters. Yeah, those little transmitters. It's like transmitting between the chip.
It's a bunch of transistors.
That's the brain.
But the thing is that the voltage literally is jumping over top. It'll jump through the
insulator.
And that causes – there's a couple things it causes. Obviously, it causes errata. A certain amount of it can be handled. The other thing it does is it drains. It can, like, if it's shorting a lot in a chip, it'll drain your battery to nothing as it keeps on moving through stuff. So, among a lot of other things. Anyway, so what this means is that we'll get faster chips.
It means that Moore's Law can continue for years to come.
Remember Moore's Law is still in effect.
I can't remember what generation of Power PC it was, but the SOI architecture, that was what IBM was holding up as like the next huge wave, and it was a big deal in the 90s. And that now what they're just released is kind of replacing that. So it's like a whole another set of great stuff for the future.
Yeah. So Moore's Law will continue for at least a little while longer until we figure out that we need to build chips out of something else. Diamonds.
We find lasers. Something smaller than atoms.
Diamonds. They're actually working on that. Those guys that are making all the guys that are making diamonds right now, the artificial diamonds, a lot of that is to fund their research so that they can make diamond chips. Because the thing is that, you know, that you can now buy, I mean, I don't know why anyone would buy a regular natural diamond now, to be honest with you. I mean, it's the only way to buy a diamond is a synthetic one, because you don't have to worry about whether it's a blood diamond. You don't have to worry about, you know, funding all kinds of things you don't want to fund. And it's just as, it's chemically identical, you know, as the thing, and it's cheaper. So, and the cost, like, you can buy the cost to them to make the diamond is about $100 for a 2-carat yellow diamond, you know? And so they're making bank with their little machines. And, it wasn't when they were first starting it and getting it off the ground, there was a Wired article about it years ago. And they Wired, I think, kind of updates it every once in a while to tell you, oh, by the way, now they have 3,900, you know, centrifuges or whatever they call them, the things that add all the pressure and make all the stuff. And so anyway, but a lot of when they, in the original article, what they were talking about is what they really wanted to do is get to a point where you can make diamond chips, you know, and use that as the piece, which would allow it to, handle an enormous amount of heat, you know, 'cause it's diamond. Mm-hmm. It'd be very hard. You could give it to your fiance. Here's a new chip for your computer.
You're like, why did you get me this? I wanted a sparkly, you moron.
So, do we have any other good news? Oh, by the way, does anyone use Lightroom? Do you guys use Lightroom?
I don't.
This is really a question.
That's the new
more
one.
For
that's
Scott.
That's that new.
We need Scott on the show before we really talk about it. But Lightroom is going to be out in mid February. It's going to ship off for the Mac. It's going to be $199 if you buy it before April 30th.
Is it a universal app?
It's not a universal app. It's an Intel only app, I believe.
Oh, and that's
maybe,
right.
Maybe it is a universal. Is that, app. I'm pretty sure it's Intel only. All
that's right.
Adobe's new stuff is for the Mac. Is all Intel only. They're not trying.
Does that include stuff like Dreamweaver?
No, the stuff that they already have out there, but now they're starting to roll out new applications and they're starting to port. So we saw Premiere Pro has been ported to the Mac again, you know, for a long, it took a hiatus after Final Cut Pro, you know, came out. And so we couldn't get Premiere Pro and now it's coming out, but it's Intel only. Lightroom is Intel only. The new Sound Booth, is it Sound Booth?
Sound Booth.
Yeah, Sound Booth is Intel only. So they're just saying, you know, we're not going to try to keep track of the old stuff. We're just going to.
I think the reason for that is, you know, Apple's strategy for development has to do with the universal apps, where if you build it in Apple's manner, you can just push a button and basically have the PowerPC version and the Intel version. Whereas other companies, like especially companies that are putting half their stuff into the Windows and half the stuff to the Mac, they don't use Apple's tools at all. They use their own custom platform. And so before they were doing, that was the reason why the plans for Rhapsody and old OS X were all delayed, was because their custom system didn't have any way to create Mac OS X apps. So they were creating, they had their own system to create Windows apps and old Mac apps. So now what they've done is basically done the same thing, where they have a same custom system that builds Windows apps and they port those to Intel. So they don't benefit from Apple's architecture and they can't support the PowerPC. Well, that has nothing to do with Apple's PowerPC.
They don't have this book.
Alex is holding up a copy of O'Reilly's
Learning Cocoa with Objective-C. This is my new book. I just got it over the
weekend. It looks pretty cool.
I'm actually pretty excited about it.
It's purple.
What are you going to do with that?
I'm gonna learn how to code.
Is anybody else going to learn?
I'm going to do a reading.
I'm throwing you a softball here, Alex.
I'm doing a reading.
The kids, now you understand. I don't know, Alex, you're a busy man. You're running businesses all over America. You're not having a TV. You've got a lot of balls in the air.
But I'm going to learn.
Are you aware how excited the kids are about the prospect of doing MacBreak Dev?
Well, that's actually what got me into it. So what happened was is the people were listening and John said, maybe we should do a MacBreak Dev. Yeah. And then we asked people if they wanted to do MacBreak Dev and people were
overwhelming response.
Yeah, it was like a lot of people, not only were they posting to the twit.tv thing, but I was getting emails, John's getting emails, we're all getting like, yeah, we want to play. And it's something that we want to do anyway. And so
all different levels too. A lot of people are saying, you know, I want an introduction.
Yeah.
People are saying, I want a video podcast. I want some way to like walk me through this code.
And we're looking at making two different podcasts mm-hmm. around it. One that's really more for the beginner, like, okay, we're going to show you how to start. And that's why I started like figuring, I want to play too. And then a discussion for coders to talk
well,
about.
Well, then
issues.
I started drilling into it. I found an amazing wealth of resources right here in the Bay Area that we can either go to them and basically take our podcast on the road and talk to people that really matter that have actually written this stuff, or we can have them come here and they get a boondoggle trip to San Francisco.
Yeah. So the so we're gonna so as we started to prepare for that, you know, and get ready for it, I don't know exactly when it's gonna come out, but it'll be sometime soon. And I got really excited. You know, I used to be a real coder.
You used to do some crazy old language, Pascal.
And I did. I started with
Assembler.
Basic. I started with Basic on a Trash 80, a TRS 80, a Radio Shack, little piece of trash. And then did Basic for the Apple IIe, and then Pascal, Assembly Language, and Machine Language. Those were the, you know, because I was doing mostly graphic stuff. And this is like when I was like 13 and 14 years old, and then the Mac came out. And I, you know what happened was, I just, when the Mac came out, it was a new programming language, and I didn't quite get it. Like, it was like, you know, it just was one of those things. And then my life had become busier. I was in high school now, and there were other things that I was worried about and everything else. And I stopped coding, and I literally haven't written any significant code. And we all know how I feel about HTML, you know.
All so I haven't too written. Clearly.
So as we started getting to this, I got really excited about it. And so I went through a lot of the books, and I really felt like this was the easiest one to, you know, kind of start playing with. And so we're going to do a reading in the Pixel Core where, you know, where we all read it together and go through the
kind of an Oprah for geeks kind of thing.
Yeah. And I'm going to open it up and I'm going to go,
we should put a link to this in show notes.
Today, I'd like to read about Objective-C. The brainchild of Brad Cox, Objective-C is a very simple language. It is a superset. That's what it'll sound like. No, it won't actually sound like that at all.
You know, it's an interesting thing. When the Mac came out, it was a very big paradigm shift for all of us because we were used to writing our own UI. We were used, we used to have to go and write to the parallel port or the serial port to make our own, to make a driver so that we could print. And there weren't these services like a graph port where you could draw to and then say, okay, I need this printed. And then there was a manager that handled that. Or if you wanted to open a file, you called SF put file or SF get file, and it gave you the dialogue. And then all you did was got the path back. You didn't have to write any of that code. It was an incredible moment, and it took everybody really about 2 years to really get their head around it, to make it work. I should plug my basic interpreter because you brought it.
Yes.
So I wrote a basic interpreter called 3B. If you go to 3am.com, you can go and play with this thing. It gives you a blinking cursor. Looks like an Apple IIe. If you type in help, it'll give you all the commands. If you click on the little help button, it gives you, takes you to a wiki that gives you all the stuff that I did. I wrote it in 30 days in March 2002. Never written an interpreter before, and so I decided that that would be a good thing to do.
That's what I'm looking forward to. I just feel like writing something because I want to.
But it's kind of weird. I mean, here's a basic interpreter inside of a web page.
That's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
What are you going to write?
Me?
Yeah.
I don't know. So it's going to be Objective-C that we learn.
Yeah, I'm not interested. I have to admit, for those of you, I don't know why PC people listen to this show, but I'm not interested in learning how to code for anything other than the Mac. I'm not willing to bother.
Sit down. I've been toying with, I've never really learned. So I was mostly like a, we used to call them web designers, but now they make $40,000 more a year and they're called interaction designers. But I used to be didn't do a lot of developing, but I think some of the interesting stuff is happening with the web development stuff. So I would be inclined to want to learn something like Rails. But
right. But
having said that, it would be pretty neat to be able to put stuff together on your own for the
I'm all about NetApps. Mac.
Oh, there's so
y'all about .NetApps?
NetApps. Oh, net applications, okay. .NET. I'd like to learn how to do .NetApps for
my
Mac.
It's a very mature framework.
Do you write any code, Dan?
Well, the last bunch of work that I did, I was working with web objects, which kind of appealed to me because it was a combination of doing kind of the graphic design of how something's going to look and then separately doing the code, which is not my stronger point.
Right.
And just seeing how things work together and making not only something that looked a certain way but also had interactivity to it.
I kind of like that about the dashboard as well. Have you played with Dash Code? I think Dash Code is cool.
Dash Code cool. In combination with just a bit of PHP or just a bit of Rails or just a bit of something on the server side makes a really scary and compelling tool.
I'm just amazed. It's probably one of the funnest like developer tools I've seen.
It's like in the 60s when people made their own stereos. There's like this little fun like homegrown movement where people who have never done anything, never made anything more than say an HTML page, are going out and playing with Dash Code. I get emails all the time from people who are making these really cool little widgets for 43 folders. People are making stuff for MacBreak.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of cool.
Actually, the coolest thing that's in Xcode is Quartz Composer.
Yeah, that's cool.
Here's a programming language that has no code. It's a bunch of noodles. And Alex is, we're always teasing Alex about the noodles. But here's,
I love the noodle.
But here's the thing. Basically, you're just hooking this to that. And I'm using air pointers. You're hooking this to that. And then eventually you write it to the graph port and it does cool stuff. And so like you can hook up an RSS feed, for example, and use that as the input. And then it'll display.
And how do you then compile that, or do you?
No, you do a command S and then drop it into something.
Wow. That's
like you can make it into a dashboard, for example, or you can make it into a screensaver, for example. Or if you do just an itty bit of Xcode, you can just drag that into there, and then you have an application that does that stuff.
Nifty.
Would we be in our notional project here? Would we be using Xcode to learn?
No, that's all we'd be using.
Yeah, that's all we're using.
That's all we're going to use.
The kids have access to it. It's free. It comes with every single Mac.
It's free.
Works with PowerPC. Works with Intel.
A powerful coder.
Remember the development tools for Next Step were something in the order of $800 a copy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, generally, I mean, otherwise, or it'd be like Code Warrior is whatever, $300 or $400.
Well, MPW at one point required a subscription to the ADC.
Yeah,
and I think it was $2,500 a year, $5,000. I don't know, whatever it was, we paid it, and because it was cheap, it was the tool.
Free.
Now it's free.
Applications. What are you going to recommend today, John?
I'm going to recommend a thing called. Oh crap! You have to go to the next person because I have to remember it.
Merlin.
I'm not sure exactly how I happened back upon this, but an application that I really liked a few years ago, Gus Mueller from Flying Meat. Has a wonderful application called VoodooPad. And I know this is going to be old news to a lot of people, but you know, we have such an embarrassment of riches in terms of apps that do fascinating things on OS X. And have to admit that I've wanted to get to a point in the maturity of my own little system where I wasn't constantly fiddling, but I've had a need for a new tool, and I went back to VoodooPad to find that in 3.1 or wherever it is now, there is a lot of really cool crap in this application. VoodooPad, if you don't know what it is, is basically it's a Mac wiki as a desktop app. So it's a desktop app that's a wiki. You start typing in camel case and it makes links. You click those links, they turn into new pages. They all live inside of this application. You can have multiple different ones of these.
Can you have lots of people accessing the same one?
No. I don't think you can.
It's a personal wiki.
I haven't drilled down on this, but there was talk at one point of how you could make this interact with, I forget the name of, one of the very like total like ghetto wikis, and it wasn't like Media Wiki or anything, but there was something that you could sync with. He's talked about having some sync functionality for that, so that's the downside. But here's what's great about it. So even if you're just a dude out there typing inside your little local wiki, you can very easily do things like push it out to your iPod. You can quickly export it using any of a variety of skins into a web page. I think Gus actually maintains the basic online documentation inside a wiki and then just pushes it out. But some of the new features that are mind-blowing, it now has this sketch functionality where you can pop up a page and start writing and do a little drawing right inside of the page. Something that was really cool, I made a MacBreak page and was typing in everybody's names and noticed that the names, not camel cased, were turning into links. And I'm like, buh? And I mouse over. It's picking those up out of the address book.
Wow. Oh.
So I can click to open the address book entry or click to send email right from inside this app. And then finally, if you're somebody like Alex who doesn't want to do HTML but has a certain amount of anal retentiveness, for any page that you've got, you can create aliases for it. So typically you would have a page in old school like PHP, you know, wiki kind of talk. You would say something like Alex Lindsay in camel case as one word. But you can also say capital A Alex space capital L Lindsay also equals that, and just the word Alex equals that, and Pixel Core guy equals that. So anytime you type any of those words,
Pixel Core guy,
it automatically generates that. You know, and this sounds kind of goofy, but that's actually pretty powerful. Yeah. Anyway, it's a terrific app. And of course, it works with Quicksilver. It's very easy to interact with Quicksilver. There's some very cool little Apple scripts that will let you even append to pages inside of your wiki if you're a huge Quicksilver nerd like me. I think it's around $30, flyingmeat.com, I believe. We'll double check that for the show notes.
We'll get it in the show notes.
VoodooPad is just a terrific application. I've met Gus, and he's a great guy, and I highly recommend it.
Dan.
Well, I have to admit that I don't have an application in mind. But I'll call mine Leopard, because I think it's coming out soon, and I think people will like it.
Do we think it's going to come out next week?
I don't have any special information, no, but that'd be great. And apparently, at the launch of Leopard, Apple will be doing like a Microsoft sort of thing where Leopard is going to be branded.
You know, it'll be late.
Or
it won't sell.
Well,
are we still on mic?
If you remember, like every time Microsoft comes out with Windows, they also come out with Office, and they're branded similarly, right. And they did in 2000 and later. And that looks like what Apple's doing now with Leopard and iWork and iLife is kind of putting them all in the same UI and the same marketing deal and
tasty. Can I ask a related question?
Sure.
Can anybody, so I think, was it you I was talking to this about, Alex? The Apple TV and the ability to possibly use Leopard?
The rumor is that you'll be able to push Leopard, your desktop to your TV through Apple TV.
The rumor is that in the development Leopard that people have seen, this is a rumor that is widely circulated, so I'm not breaking any NDAs, that you will be able to do that, which I think sounds pretty interesting.
Would be trivial to do. Apple has since Tiger, they built in the VNC.
No one is more trivial than Apple.
Right.
So if
you want to check your email while you're watching TV the football game.
Would that be faster than remote desktop?
It would be kind of identical to.
Nah. But easier to use.
Apple's remote desktop uses a special, actually, I think since 2, they use VNC. And they do some special things on top of it. Basically, what VNC was designed for, it was AT&T Labs came out with the thing for the little, they had this idea that you'd have a wireless pad and be walking around and be basically a terminal. And so that's what VNC was designed for. It was virtual network computing. It was like the NC on this virtual page. And so that didn't really go anywhere. So they've turned it into a way to do remote sharing from one computer to another,
which is
shooting
awesome,
the thing across. So
you've
so
talked
doing
about
that
some
from
amazing ways. Hey, no.
Well, I'll be
from India.
I was sitting in my hotel in Mumbai. I was sitting in my hotel in Mumbai uploading stuff to myself from this laptop sitting here connected to all the computers here. So I would control this laptop, go over here, grab some files from the server, move them over, you know, and from there up, FTP them so that I could download them in Mumbai. But, you know, just there's this weird thing about being literally halfway around the world controlling my computer. It was awesome.
What are you excited about, though? What's your Leopard grabby thing? What are you, like, most looking forward to?
Well, one of the things that I was on my wish list for Leopard last year was I was calling it Remote Desktop Express because the remote desktop product is so expensive. It's like a $300 product that was designed for school administrators or whatever to look at 10,000 kids' laptops or whatever. And I wanted them to make a product that was similar to what Microsoft has when bundled in Windows, the remote desktop.
Right.
Anyway, that anyone would use. And how that is being exposed is through iChat. So you can put your whole, I can't think what they're actually calling it, but.
You'll be able to control someone else's computer while you're on iChat with them.
Yeah,
so you're talking to them,
make a chat,
video,
say, share my video.
Mac world.
Show my,
pretty cool.
Right.
Nifty.
So yeah, and like for instance, if you don't have the money, by the way, like all Macintoshes, all modern Macs with OS X can be controlled by Apple Remote Desktop. It's built in. You just turn it on as a radio box, in your sharing, and they can be controlled. But it's the controller that costs. I think is it $399?
Well, it's only if you buy the real expensive version, and that's kind of like a system administrator type of version that allows you to look at a whole bunch of Macs across the network and pull information from them and do all this kind of database stuff.
But I don't think you can look at another computer and control it with just your regular OS X.
You can get a free, if you turn that on, if you turn on remote desktop sharing on the Macs that you want to see, you can get a free client, a VNC viewer.
Okay.
And there's several of those. It's
a
standard.
We use Chicken of the VNC,
right.
I think, here.
Yeah, so you can use that to freely look at another.
Yeah, and we use that. That's what I was going to say.
There's also Devin. Devin has one of those. Devin, why am I forgetting the name of that company? The people who make Devin Think have a...
Because you don't have a Mac in front of you.
John, did you come up with a...
I did. And so I'm going to describe the issue that I have. And that is that Google is an interesting search engine, but it doesn't always give me the answers that I'm looking for. I'm really addicted to using the search box over in the upper right-hand corner of Safari.
Isn't that Google?
Yeah, it's Google. But it bugs me that it's only Google. And so it turns out there's a tool, and I can't remember the name of it, but this is why we have Delicious tag MBW ideas, because I put it there.
And this is also why we have show notes.
That's why we have show notes.
There's a random tool somewhere.
Yeah, it's this thing, and I can't remember the name of it because
allowed to have our laptops.
Forgot to write it down on my.
It's a better show.
It's
without
a
the
much
lab.
Better show. You're right.
On my what's it called? My Merlin Man. Hipster PDA shuffle. See, I'm using the hipster shuffle.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Did you guys watch that video?
The hipster shuffle is really cool. But the problem is that the way that you figure out if you're in random access mode or sequential mode is you flip a coin.
Hey, don't do that over my little thing.
And then it tells you which way to go. But then because it's a shuffle, there's no display, so you have to remember everything. So
jot it on a card.
So but no. This so is what does this tool this do? What is this? Is the hipster shuffle. So anyway, the idea is that you can change to your search engine. You can change it to A9. You can change it to Google Images. You can change it to Google Blog. You can change it to Ask Jeeves or Ask.com, whatever that is. And you can change it so I want to go look at this thing over here. And so the cool thing is when you're doing research is that you're not taken out of the paradigm of what you're always used to doing, which is Command-L-Tab to get to that. To get to that space.
Right.
So anyway, if Alex would look that up and tell us what that
is. That's something Firefox has had for a while, right?
Yeah, we're going to put it in the show notes.
Yeah. But the idea is this. It's a free tool. It works for PowerPCs or for Intel Macs. And you drag it into, basically it's benign, although people in the forums have complained that it will crash in some cases. But I've used it for like almost a year and a half now, and I've never had a problem.
Is it near the top?
Yep, it should be near the top.
I don't see it. I think you're on drugs.
I am not.
Too much Magnolia.
Yep.
Hey, Alex.
I'm not drinking IPA.
Alex.
Yes.
Alex, do you have a pick for the week?
I do.
And
okay, so
start with the price.
Does it have noodles?
$700.
The worst part is I didn't $500. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know how much it was.
You started out, so you found a great app you like,
and then I looked at it, and it was $699.99.
Oh, come on! You've got to be kidding.
No, it isn't. It's really well. One version of
it's
literally
a penny shy of $700.
Yeah. So I'm still under. I'm under the $700 because I've decided that I can't actually recommend anything over $700 because Merlin gives me a hard time. But I'm one penny under.
Did you call the developer?
If I was
changed the price,
I did. I actually.
It
used to be $749, and I called him. I said, "I'm going to talk about this on Mac Break, and you don't understand. I can't deal with Merlin, and you're going to have to make it $699. Anyway, so here's what it is. I hope I didn't already recommend this one because I was beta. Oh no, I was beta testing it, so I couldn't talk about it. So we have this little thing that I've been testing for a while, and now it's been released, and it's called Scopebox. Now this is a geeky little thing, so this is not kind of general Mac usage. But if you're into this, it's very very useful. So what Scopebox does is when we're doing video production and we're recording, what you want to be able to see is lots of information about your video input. So you're feeding lots of data into your video data, and what you want to see are things like what they call a vector scope. It shows you where the colors are hitting whether the colors are kind of where
out of gamut or something.
Somewhat out of gamut, largely just if they're in the right color space. Then you also have a histogram showing you the dark to light. Most importantly for a lot of what we do, which is green screen, we need to see what's called the RGB parade. And so the RGB parade is it's basically these little things that show you the image that's represented in the red, green, and blue. Because if you have a green screen, you want the green screen to be really high and the red and the blue to be really low for the screen. And so what Scopebox does is it's this, it opens up and there's this gray thing and you can see your image and you can literally just like right click and drop new little different ways of measuring it. You just in this open area, you can move it around the way you want it to. So it's not like a specific, this is the way you're going to look at it. You can move it and make it look any way you want. So you can set this all up so that you can really get all that information. And to give you an idea, a lot of these scopes, like if you bought these, and they're more powerful when you buy the physical ones, but the physical ones are going to cost you like $5,000 or $10,000 to have all these scopes. And for HD, for the kind of HD that we do, with the 950, we're talking about probably closer to $30,000. You know,
you're saving money, Alex.
I'm saving money.
This is not $700 spent. This is maybe what, $25,000
saved.
I'm
buying a car with the money I saved.
Theoretically, you could spend.
No, I'm actually not going to buy a car. But you save a lot of money. But the point is that you're really
getting. It's very flexible.
It's very, very flexible. It's really, really easy to use. And it's just one of those things. We literally were talking about developing it in-house because we needed it so badly. And so that's why I'm recommending it. I was so excited to see that. Like, it was one of those things that I hadn't heard of, and suddenly it just popped out. It was, you know, it's on beta, and so I emailed the guys, and they sent it.
Do they have any kind of, like, a demo or anything you can try?
I think that there's a demo on the site.
Sounds
really
cool.
Yeah, there's a trial that you can download on their site. It's just scopebox.com, divergentmedia.com. But if you do scopebox.com, it'll send it to you. You have to fill in some, like, little things, but it will and tell everyone if you download it, make sure to say, it says, where did you hear about it? And make sure to say,
So
and why, I don't get anything out of that, by the
way.
So
why would I want to spend half of what Final Cut Pro costs, because Final Cut Pro already has scopes in it.
Yeah, but here's what it doesn't have. So Final Cut Pro has, when you open scopes in Final Cut Pro, what you get is the vector scope, mm-hmm. and you can get the luma, and then you can get the a general, you know, luminance, mm-hmm. you know,
like the light view. Meter version.
Yeah, but the problem is that what you don't get specifically are you can't change. There's a lot of other ways that you could measure it. Number one, number two is that there are. The RGB parade, if you're doing green screen stuff, is absolutely necessary. So what we end up having to do in Final Cut Pro is capture and then look at the RGB parade because it has it in there, but we can't look at it live. The big thing is that what I'm looking at with this scope box is I'm looking at a live feed straight into my from my camera into my computer, and I'm able to make a lot of decisions about all of the stuff in real time while and what happens is just to give you an idea from a visual effects perspective. If I have a set of Kinos, these big like fluorescent lights that I'm lighting up my green screen with, I can literally, when I'm looking at scope box, I can look at the little things. I turn the monitor around, so I'm looking at it, and I can literally move the lights and just even out my screen in minutes, like 2 or 3 minutes. And the thing is, having that just right saves a lot of time. And when you're in a production environment, it's very
well. Here's the thing: I've done production on green screen, blue screen. And the way that I did this before I had scope box, and if I didn't have scopes, is I took a light meter.
Yeah.
I went like this,
yeah.
And I looked at it because I couldn't move it. And I went like this. I'm basically moving my hand up and down. And I would go and I'd try to balance it out to get it to be a quarter of a stop.
Pain.
Yeah, and it took like 2 hours to do this.
And I can do it.
You can do it as a one-man job.
Yeah. I can get an even screen with two Kinos. I can get an even screen in less than 3 minutes.
Yeah. So the other, but
this
was 15 years ago before they even had this kind of stuff.
And Final Cut Pro is great, but if you're just capturing, that's way overkill. I mean, the other thing you have to look at is, if you're on your machine and you have Final Cut on some other machine, you're capturing to this machine. Final Cut is a lot of editor to open up just because you want to capture off of a live feed. You know, that's
Mac only.
This is Mac only.
So I can put this on. I can put this on an old PowerBook and just dedicate the PowerBook
for viewing. If you're not recording, the other thing that Scopebox will do is it'll actually write to drive.
Cool.
So you can actually use it as your capture thing as well. So you can actually.
Well, you guys need that.
Video. Well, we capture it through Final Cut Pro, and
right now you're tying up a camera and a Mac whenever you guys are capturing off DV.
Well, we still have to do that. We still have to do that. I mean, that doesn't change. But
that's the
point
kink
is
in the hose, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially during Mac world.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh man. We are moving towards. We're not quite there, but we've made the commitment that by the middle of this year, there's two things. One is that. For the Mac, for the Pixel Core stuff, not necessarily Twit stuff, but for the Pixel Core stuff, we are going to be HD only, and we're going to be tapeless. We're not going to make there will be no more tapes in the office. You know, we're done.
So how do you hold the cords down onto the floor?
yeah, exactly.
Glue.
There you go.
Oh man!
All right, Dan Dilger, thanks so much for coming.
Thanks for having me.
What's your latest article right now on Roughly Drafted?
I've been writing all kinds of stuff about the iPhone and comparing it to
other
phones.
I don't care about third-party applications. I know, that's why everybody whining about that.
And other development platforms from... I've been doing a history of Windows CE, Windows Mobile, and the Palm OS.
Wow.
How that all played out. And so it's kind of an interesting little learning experience for me to research all that.
That's awesome. So, and it's roughlydrafted.com?
Right.
Very nice. It's probably the most complex. It's iWeb, right?
Yeah.
It's the most complex iWeb website I've ever seen in my entire life.
Wow. It is a crazy extension of iWeb in directions that Apple would not recommend.
It's incredible. You just have to go to roughlydrafted.com just to see what you can do with iWeb, because when I look at it, I'm just like,
what you shouldn't do with iWeb.
Yeah, but I look at it, I'm just like, holy smokes. Merlin Mann, 43
Alex,
folders.
43 folders, yep. I've been spending most of my days sitting around here.
Merlin is in the office. We let him come in for a couple of days, and next thing you know, he's putting tape on the floor. So he's got his own little office, like Les Nessman.
This is all still Skunk Works. This is all off the record. So
yeah, exactly.
So if the five or six people listening to this, don't tell anybody. Yeah. I've been spending a lot of time here. And so that's, hanging out at 43folders.com, but spending a lot of time here and with my friend Ben. Now, does Ben have a copy of this? Of this board thing that you were talking about, this
scope box,
does he have that?
He does.
Hmm.
Oh, I don't know if he does or not, but I can get him one.
Good to know.
He just has to.
We're lighting with like Coleman lanterns right now. That's the nature of a Skunk Works project. We've got like my Sony camera and some Coleman lanterns.
There you go.
Copy of Quicksilver.
John Foster?
If you want to talk to me, you have to go to twit.tv/forums. Pay your $2, and then you can type questions, and I'll be able to answer them for you. Or you can go to twit.tv/MBW.
Soon. Soon we're going to have a new webpage.
What is that new webpage, Alex?
Soon. There's nothing to go to right now, but hope.
So it goes
within 2 weeks.
So it goes to 404 not found right now.
I think it goes to 404 not found. If you go to 2 weeks from now, if you go to pixelcore.tv, you'll see some stuff.
So we have a new home coming up.
Yeah, we're gonna move some stuff. We've grown a little big for the house that we're in.
You know, the only thing we need is a feature that keeps track of all of our picks of the week. That's easily
someone. Available. There's someone who actually
he's a little behind. I think.
He hasn't updated it since 2020.
Well, we'll get our producers on it. We'll get them jamming away.
Give them something.
Your unholy ninja army of the night. All these producers I keep hearing about. This is going to be awesome.
60 producers, you know. No, so anyway, that's it. I'm Alex Lindsay. This mess that you've been listening to is Mac Break Weekly. And break time is over. There you go.
That's it.
That's all. We are so over time.
Whose fault is that?
It's my fault.
Don't you use that free timer thing that shows you?
No, I can see what time it is. I could see that we've been talking for an hour and 15 minutes. I just didn't know how to get out of it. There were things to talk about. 15 reasons to switch to Vista.
Brother.
Oh, no, these are 15 reasons to switch to OS X.
Well, there was a PC World article on 15 reasons.
All right, so this was on Mac user. So they said, it's the interface stupid, flip over Windows, flip 3D, let's see, live thumbnails, boost performance with Ready Boost.
Kenji was talking earlier about. So I've been trying to ask people: have you guys interacted with Vista on like a normal human computer? Because I'm hearing some pretty crazy stories, and I don't know if these are accurate. Kenji's telling me he's seeing Vista on a pretty tricked out machine with 2 gigs of RAM,
and it can flip.
Nothing's happened.
Oh, really?
Well, no. I mean, it's the apparently and
Excel
again,
is screaming.
This is, don't go put this anywhere. But I mean, I haven't seen this myself. What?
I'm gonna put it somewhere.
No, but don't go, Merlin Mann predicts that, because I don't know.
Merlin Mann predicts the end of Microsoft.
I'm just repeating what I've heard. But everybody's saying, like, even when you've got a really tricked out PC with a lot of RAM and up-to-date video and whatnot, it's
sucky.
Slower. People are saying it is slower.
But it's 1.0.
Actually, it's 6.0. Zenti 6.0. But
have
that
you,
doesn't...
Have you played this at all? Have you?
I haven't used Vista on a... On a tricked out machine now.
In the old machine, does it work okay?
I had low expectations.
There you go. I just think that I still think this is their last OS.
They were talking
about
this.
We can hope.
They were talking about this on forum this morning on KQED. I was just kind of half listening. But a lot of people were calling in and they're like, the persistent question seems to be
why? Why should I upgrade?
Why or when? Yes, exactly. So it's so funny because you can call us fanboys if you want, but we're all like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Man, run my card now. If I could have it 5 hours earlier, I want the functionality that I have seen demonstrated to me, and I'm very excited to put this into use. And I'm seeing a lot of people from what do they call it? From bottom feeders all the way up to the top of the enterprise going, you know what? We're going to hold off a couple years. We're going to make sure all those holes are closed, and we want to understand what it is we can expect to get in terms of productivity for spending this much on hardware and software to upgrade.
Well, I know that I have to look at this upgrade for 30 machines coming up in the next year. And I'm like,
okay. why would you want to be the beta tester for the first year if you're a big company?
Well, the thing is, there's five things that hold me back. One of them is that the client has a VPN and we have to connect to that. And if their IT people say no Vista, then it's not happening.
Gets into something that you and I have talked about before, Merlin. I mean, you know, there's just a very different cross section of the type of person that buys a Mac and the type of person that buys a PC.
Historically, there's been a lot of reason to choose one platform over the other, and a lot of it comes down to dough.
Yeah, I mean, you have a business that wants to, business administrators like it because it gives them a lot of control, and
it's the devil they know.
It's what they know, and it made them more important. I mean, this is the big thing. When I was working at Lucasfilm, there were 200 computers. Half of them were Mac, half of them were PC, and there were 6 people administrating the PC side and one guy who spent half his day on the Mac and half his day on the PC. And the thing is that I started thinking that the reason that IT guys add PCs is so that they're more necessary, because if you use a Mac, the guys are kind of self-contained, and so the thing is that when you have business users, obviously there a lot of those are PC, but why would they upgrade? It'd be nuts to move your system to Vista in the first year.
Well, you've the training reason alone. I have to retrain everybody. I have to have my apps work. I have to, you know, I lose probably 6 weeks of productivity in the switch. Thing is when 10.5 comes out, we lose like 6 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other.
And if you're gonna spend that dough on hardware, this is the part that kind of like, I just find a little bit mind-boggling. If you're gonna spend, like, if I go out and I buy a new video card for a big machine, or I go out and whatever, if I go out and add more RAM, my expectation is that when I buy new hardware, all of the things being equal, I'm gonna get a bump in performance, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I guess maybe that's really incredibly obvious, but it just seems funny to me that like I would go take the dough and go buy like a more tricked out machine and keep running XP. People, I don't hear a lot of people going XP's not cutting it for me.
Yeah,
if you like Windows, most people seem happy with XP.
But I think the other issue is that a lot of people who buy PCs in the general, you know, the consumer that buys PCs is a lot of times they're making a price choice. You know, they're really looking at, mm-hmm. I don't want to spend a lot. I mean, my parents were very excited because they moved from their Windows 98 machine to XP with their $400 Dell. And they were very, you know, my mom was like, and it's just so fast, you know, and I was like, okay, you know, but it works, you know, it works for them, but they're not interested in anything other than like surfing the web and printing, you know, and that's the difference is that, but those people aren't likely to upgrade. My parents will upgrade to Vista sometime, I'm figuring 2011, 2012 is when they'll move to Vista. And that's the issue is that I think that's what's going to be interesting to see as we look at market growth over the next, because I think it'll actually impede purchasing for a little while because people are not sure if they want to move all their stuff. When they buy a new machine, they're now going to have to move to a foreign land.
Well, here's the grand experiment. A friend of mine said, fix my PC. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll fix your PC. Turns out there were 7,000 pieces of things running on it. Viruses, Trojans.
Was it a zombie?
Zombified.
Had it been zombified?
Yeah, and it had been zombified. It even had the BIOS had been flashed so that basically if you got all this stuff off.
They gave it a new brain?
If you got all this stuff off, man. 5 minutes after you rebooted, it was zombified again.
Oh my gosh.
It was incredible. So what I did is that I just blasted it. I put Ubuntu on it. I gave it back to the guy and go, here you go.
Really?
And he's like, whoa, this is really cool. and so there was a bit of a learning curve. I would say that probably no more than if he would have got Vista. But he's excited now because nothing's going to own his machine ever again.
Well, and that's one of the things that's interesting is that you look at the people who are very price conscious and you wonder why, as we start going down the path, why they don't just get Linux machines. You know, if they really want to get something cheap and something that's not, you know, so they get Ubuntu or something like that. And then if they really want the whiz bang thing that really works, then you end up with them buying Macs, and then you end up with Windows and kind of this weird, like, you know, buy an Xbox. I mean, you know, and that's what I think, and that's why I think that Microsoft's model is really more about the Xbox than it is about the OS, because I just don't think that there's a model left.
Well, the Xbox mentality becomes really good because you have a closed system.
Yeah.
And if you provide, you
get back, they get they're doing what app they'll be successful doing what they said Apple made the mistake of doing.
Well, the problem with looking at it that way, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. But if you look at where Microsoft actually makes its money, all of its money is coming from Windows and Office.
Yeah,
Office
all of its
is
money.
A big one, isn't
it's
it?
It's losing. It's making like somewhere in the area of $10 billion from each monopoly. Everything else, almost everything else, is losing huge amounts of money. So right. The Xbox, all the handheld, Windows Mobile, Windows CE, Windows Embedded, all that stuff lost $1 billion last year. That's more than Apple lost in the worst time of Apple's experience. So, I mean, the part of Microsoft that's acting like Apple is acting like Apple from 1986.
Right.
1996.
I think they have to. I don't think they have a choice. I think they have to go and bet on these.
Oh, they're trying, yeah.
They have to go and bet on these technologies and learn about them because –
They have the freedom to do that. They got $40 billion in the bank. They can think about it for a while. I mean, they got a burn rate for – Microsoft's got a good burn rate. They can figure it out for a while.
A lot of people are saying they're much more excited about the changes in Office than they are in terms of the actual Vista stuff.
I have not been excited about an upgrade in Office since 5.1.
Well, and that's the other thing. It's a pretty
there's nothing that I needed past 5.1.
It's a pretty controversial upgrade too, though, right? It's going to substantially change the way you use stuff like Office and Excel with the ribbons and whatnot.
Yeah, they changed the whole menu bar. So instead of being like a conventional menu bar with the buttons that people finally memorized, it now has like the start button. basically has a start button menu bar that you have the office. And it's just like, why did they do that?
I don't know. Just I don't want them to change
corporate
anything.
Branding.
You
it's
know,
weird.
I have to admit, but this is coming from someone who generally writes everything in text edit. So I don't need anything. I just need to write my text down. I don't really need it to format. I don't need to do anything. I'm not trying to present from my thing. That's what a page layout program. I mean, you know, that's what when I think
that's what they were saying. Again, this is on forum this morning, but they were saying that that's I haven't really I don't really follow Windows, but they were saying that that's the thing. This is for people who are really interested in like making something in Microsoft Word over which they have a lot of control over layout and things like that. This will be an interesting upgrade.
Yeah,
but I mean, gosh, for something like Excel. Yeah. It's like, what does Excel not have?
I saw this most scary Excel thing I'd ever seen in my life. Someone sent me an Excel where it's literally like a PowerPoint presentation with animations and everything. He built it in Excel. Like the guy knows Excel so well, he built the whole, like that's what he knows how to do. So he just built it in that. And I was like, I saw it. I kept on playing it, looking at it like, it's not possible. You know, like that's not, you can't. To do that, you know, and it's
did you see the comment on During Fireball that he posted about Steve Ballmer? Mm-mm. He keeps his calendar in Excel.
Did you see that photo? Steve Ballmer's office? Steve Ballmer's office is smaller than this.
Wow.
It's really, really small. And he keeps, like Dan said, so he doesn't use Outlook, huh?
Apparently Outlook's not very good.
Really?
Actually, if you ask a Magic 8-Ball, it'll tell you Outlook.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to have to cut it off.